The presenting sponsor of Top Docs is Netflix. Now presenting the documentary series, Escaping Twin Flames. From Emmy nominee Cecilia Peck, this three-part documentary series pulls back the veil on Twin Flames universe, a controversial online community that preys on people looking for love. Den of Geek says it tackles one of the more interesting subjects that streaming has in some time. Escaping Twin Flames is available now on Netflix.
The question is, what if teenage girls ran the world? What would that world look like? This is that world in microcosm. This is Girl State, a sibling to Boy State, a week-long program where 500 teenage girls build a democracy from the ground up.
Hi, I'm Ken Jacobson, and welcome to Top Docs. Today, we're talking to directors Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss about their documentary, Girl State. Girl State had its world premiere at the 2024 Sundance Film Festival and screened at this year's True False Film Festival. The film launches on Apple Plus on April 5th. This is the third visit to Top Docs for Amanda and Jesse. In fact, their very first visit was for Boys State, which was the first Top Docs podcast ever aired. The film later went on to win the 2021 Primetime Emmy Award for Best Nonfiction Film. They've also been on the pod to talk about their fascinating documentary, The Mission, which premiered at the 2023 Telluride Film Festival and was released by National Geographic Documentary Films and Picture House. Now to Girl State. For this film, Jesse and Amanda traveled to Missouri. If you recall Boy State, that took place in Texas. And while both Texas and Missouri are red states, in this case, it seems that the conservatives are outnumbered by the liberals, which makes for an interesting film because their main protagonist, one Emily Worthmore, is a self-proclaimed conservative. Following her narrative arc through the week, as well as those of the other main characters, is a truly engaging experience, just like it was in Boys State. In this case, though, different themes do emerge. For instance, possible inequalities between the Girl State program and the Boys State program, which is happening simultaneously on the same college campus in Missouri. Emily turns into an intrepid reporter who uncovers some of these possible inequalities. There's lots to like here. As in Boys State, it's a fascinating verite study. There's lots of really meaty issues that it gets into, and the editing and pacing are top-notch. As usual, if you like this interview, please follow us and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and tell a friend. Also, please follow us on Instagram at TopDocsPod and on Twitter also at TopDocsPod. And now my conversation with Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss, the directors of Girl State. Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss, welcome back to Top Docs for number three.
Hi, Ken.
Hello, Kim.
So we're here today to talk about Girl State. But let's go back to 2020 for a second. Boys State, your amazing film, premiered at Sundance in 2020. 4 years later, in January of 2024, Girl State premiered on opening day of Sundance. I'm not sure I know the answer to this question, which is, had Girl State been in the works since the time you started Boys State, before, after? When did that idea come along?
I think as an idea, it started at the same time Boys State did when we learned about the programs in 2017. Neither Jesse or I went to Girls or Boys State. We grew up in California. These programs exist in every state and they have for 8 years, but we didn't know about them. When we found out about them, we were interested in making films about both. I think just for a variety of reasons, it worked out in Texas that we did the boys program first. Girl State in Texas was not actually that open to having a documentary made there. So we always knew we were going to do it. It was just a matter of when, where, how, but it was never a question of why. I think that's pretty obvious. Like, we always knew. And I think it was just, again, finding the right program. And it just so happened that we are now releasing that film in another election year. So it feels, it has that same kind of feeling that it did for us when we launched Boys State in 2020.
And how did you approach Girls State from a creative point of view? I'm sure you didn't want to just repeat what you had done with Boys State.
Yeah, well, we were frankly scared about making the film. Boys State worked so well in the ways that cinema verite can work. Incredible story, incredible characters, twists and turns you couldn't have predicted. And the resonance of the film went way beyond what we ever anticipated. So to follow that up was daunting, but necessary for us. Just personally, we have two teenage daughters. I think we think a lot about how teenage girls are coming of age politically in this moment and just girlhood. And we had to give ourselves permission to fail. That was really important. We would be failing on a big stage, which is harder than failing on a small stage because we had Apple supporting the project. They bought Boys State and they were as interested as we were, Molly Thompson at Apple, in developing this project. And there was sort of a strategy of giving yourselves permission. One was to say it's a sibling, it's not a sequel. That means it shares DNA, it shares parents, but it's really, it's going to be its own thing. It needs to be its own thing, meaning we can go to a different state. We can approach it differently. And it just in a very personal, but very profound way, I remember telling Amanda, our older daughter was 16 at the time. I said, let's make it. If for no other reason than she can work for us as a production assistant on set and see what her parents do. And work with us and have that opportunity, because this is a story that's also about her in some way. Let's give her that opportunity. And then, and if it's a catastrophic failure, at least we'll have that to show for it. And so we did that. But we also immediately began to expand the scope of the film and allowing more characters to be in our story. That we also were interested in two storylines, not just the sort of electoral contest of Boys State, the race for governor. We had in Girls State a Supreme Court. We were immediately sort of expanding that frame, as it were, how we thought about it and how we would approach it.
Yeah, I want to get back to that narrative frame and the stories you did pursue in Girls State. But before that, I just want to ask why Missouri or how Missouri? Boys State was, as you mentioned, set in Texas. That wasn't going to be the case for Girls State. How did you end up there?
We went from, what is it, the Lone Star State to the Show Me State. I don't know what any of those things mean, but
I'm sitting here in the natural state and I can't really.
I think we auditioned a number of states. We couldn't stay in Texas. We didn't want to stay in Texas. The country's big. We wanted to find another state. For a second, we were thinking about California, because if we did the big red state, what if we did the big blue state? But I think for us, in the end, Missouri was super interesting because it's really complicated politically. It's not a battleground state, but it's got Cori Bush and Josh Hawley and everybody in between. And it's got rural communities, a lot of rural communities, small towns, and these big cities. That dynamic is interesting to us and certainly makes for an interesting Girl State experience for the girls who go, for kids who've never been to big cities, or for big city kids who've never met small towns. They're meeting each other for the very first time. That's exciting. Missouri, though, also just vis-a-vis this sort of conversation about abortion, we knew was a trigger law state. So it's a conservative state where if Roe v. Wade were to be overturned, or when it was overturned, abortion was going to become immediately illegal. So that added a level of something that was certainly top of mind for a lot of the girls headed to the session that year.
One other thing that was different about Missouri, of course, is that Girls State, the program, was going to happen simultaneously with their Boys State program on the same college campus the same week. And this was the first time, evidently, in history that this was going to happen. From your perspective at the outset, how did you think this might impact the young women participating in Girls State and the direction and themes of your film?
Because it had never happened before, we didn't really know what to expect. Honestly, they could have just done complete parallel play, never seen one another on the same campus. I think this was an experimental time for the programs and an advancement, really, on some level. These programs are super old and antiquated, and this is an effort to move into the 21st century and maybe share some resources. But they'd never done it before. So that we knew had potential for something, right? But I'm not sure we knew exactly what to expect. One of the surprises, for instance, was how many of our kids, our girls who were at Girls State, had very close friends who were at Boys State, and how much of that conversation was happening on the phone. So they really were having a view into the Boys State that honestly we couldn't totally see all of, because it was happening through their phone conversations and videos.
We didn't intend to make a film that like leaned into a comparison between the programs. That wasn't our intention. And in fact, we wanted to very much make sure that the girls got their due. So there was a kind of conflict a little bit, but certainly intrigue about what would result. Honestly, all we expected was hijinks, maybe, but nothing more.
I was thinking about that, though, because you do have a fair amount of footage, or at least you made the most of the footage you had of Boys State. And I was just thinking from a directorial standpoint, you've got all these characters you're following in Girls State, plus you're dipping your toe in Boys State to get coverage there. How did you know, like, how many resources to devote to Boys State and how much footage to even begin to accumulate?
It's a good question. We didn't have characters at Boys State, so that sort of made some decision-making easier. Like, when our characters went there, we went there, or when it intruded into their world, it came into our story. So drawing those boundaries was helpful. I went over at some point with a camera and shot some coverage, and so we did some kind of sporadic work. Actually, I was on a golf cart when we shoot the boys at night on the field, which is the first time they're introduced in the film. But we had to figure out when we were in the edit room, we had more material than we knew we probably needed, but how we introduced the boys and how much the boys intrude on the girls. And as you see in the film, it becomes a very important part of the conversation because the way that programs are unfolding is something that the girls are very aware of and ultimately points to this kind of much bigger story in our society about how boys and girls are treated differently. They're given different resources. They have different expectations. For example, at the end of the film, there's a scene where the girls and boys come together for, it's like a Grease, or right, Amanda? It's like a big celebration on the field, and it's like a dance party.
State fair.
It's a state fair. And we thought, oh, this is like a kind of a consummation of like where these two programs are headed. They're going to come together, and it'll be a giant set piece of the film. And we had like 9 camera coverage of this event. There were fireworks and there was a band and there was so much. We shot so much yards of footage. And it took us like 8 months to figure out that the purpose of the scene is really the purpose it serves for one character in the film, for Emily. And do you think that would be clearer? But unfortunately, these things are not clearer. And you have to just patiently figure them out for yourself when you're trying to figure out the story in the edit room.
I think the first cut of that scene was about 45 minutes long. It's just...
Wow. Well, you found the nuggets and we got the fireworks. But yes, we do track on Emily, and I'll get to her in just a second. But you've talked about the edit, and I just want to point out Jeff Gilbert, who edited Boys State, and I know The Overnighters, which is one of my favorite films of all time. He edited Boys State. As I said, Amy Foote was the editor of Girls State. And I couldn't help but notice one's a man, one's a woman. How did you end up working with Amy? And she did a masterful job, I thought, by the way.
We wanted a woman to edit the film. I think I watched every frame of our dailies, and I wanted an editor who was game to do that, too. And Amy is that. We didn't actually know her before working with her on this, but I'd heard lots of good things. And Amy's got an extraordinary sensitivity that was super necessary for watching these dailies. And what was great, you know, you kind of worry when you're starting to work with a new collaborator, like, oh, maybe are we simpatico? I don't know. But like within like 2 days of her watching the dailies, her mark that, you know, arrows to what her marks on the Avid project were almost like exactly the same ones, pretty much the ones that you. So I think when you recognize like someone seeing the same things as you, feeling not all the same feels, but generally has instinct that is like yours, and then pushes back in ways that are effective, right? We had some really interesting conversations about structure and about character. And I think that's what you're looking for. So it was the perfect match. And Amy's fantastic, truly one of the best.
The young women and girls today are extremely captivating people. They're smart, they're funny, and they're self-aware, which is something I found very interesting to watch. Self-awareness, to me, was one of the great themes, really, of both films. Another similarity with Boys State is that even though both are ensemble pieces, there's one character in both films who emerges as kind of the main protagonist, and I would argue a kind of moral center in both films. In Boys State, that character is the great Stephen Garza, who surprises many people, including the audience and even himself, with his rise to winning the gubernatorial nomination for his party. In Girls State, that main protagonist role is taken up by this young woman, Emily, who you alluded to. She's a self-identified Christian and a conservative raised by a single mom who's running for governor on her party's ticket. When you started the casting process and first started shooting, was Emily always going to be this main protagonist, or did she emerge over time, and what caught your attention?
Oh, she's a little bit like Robert in Boys State, in that we met both in casting and they really announced themselves in extraordinary ways, in ways that said immediately to us, you must be in this film. People ask us, like, how do you cast? We like to say that these kids really cast themselves. It's so evident that they're extraordinary. And Emily did announce to us that she was running for president in 2040. I've never had a young person or any person tell me, other than Pete Buttigieg, tell me she was running for president and really meant it. And that's interesting, and just had smarts and ambition and also a kind of openness of spirit that was important. And not everybody has both a sort of confidence and vulnerability that Emily shows us in the film. And I think that's what we were seeking from our collaborators, the girls who would be in this film. And it did take a long time to find all of them. We found all of them save for one beforehand, like in Boys State, and we found all save for Renee beforehand. Emily was interesting too because of her politics. They're not our politics. And I think it was a sort of first challenge to us and then to our audience to, can you relate to, identify with, sympathize with somebody whose politics you probably don't share? Some of our audience probably does, but I think for most of us in the documentary community, I'd hazard to say, are left of center. But I think to watch Emily's journey is why we love documentary filmmaking, a verite filmmaking, because you just don't know. You hope to meet somebody at a transformative moment in their lives, a Pastor Jay, a Stephen Garza. And the power of these programs, this concentrated week, is that it's a crucible. It does forge a kind of know thyself transformation, a coming of age. These are kids who are 16, 17. They're on the cusp of adulthood and sophisticated, but also not adults. And we watch them confront who they are, what they stand for. It's just extraordinary. And so Emily is that, I think, the moral center of our film and a challenge to our audience.
And the power of the program, too, as we know, if it works, and it does really work on some of these kids, is finding their voice. And I think we watched that happen in such a powerful way with Stephen in Boys State, and we watched that happen with Emily in Girls State as well. And that is also the joy of, I think, parenting, but also like nonfiction, is to watch people really, find themselves and find their power. And one of the power, actually what makes them very common, Stephen and Emily, as different as they are politically, is they both know and embody the power of listening, which I think is really interesting and probably a good lesson for the adult state in terms of politics. They have that in common. It's just natural to who they are.
And seemingly they're both in the minorities, but flipped. So in Boys State, Stevens is left of center. And the sense we get is that the political center of Boys State in Texas is to the right. Whereas here it seems flipped, at least Emily says it's flipped, and based on who ends up winning the governorship in Missouri, it does seem like perhaps most of the young women are on the left of center side. So as a conservative, she's in the minority. That to me was an interesting fact. Again, Missouri is a pretty conservative state, and yet most of the young women seem to be left of center. Did that surprise you?
It did surprise us. Yeah, we discovered that in casting, that even these young women who lived in small towns, kind of provincial backgrounds, their politics were unexpected. They were not their parents. And we began to sense that this might not be a conservative group like it was in Texas. I think what these two protagonists, Emily and Stephen Garza, shared too is watching their negotiation of being true to their political identity, but also open to finding space for connection. You see that with Emily she forges a friendship with her friend Maddie, who's gay and very left wing. They just connect with each other. And that's not something we see much in our world, certainly in the political world. But Emily, as a Christian, as a conservative in this space, wanting to try to figure out, how do I appeal to enough of the group to be a viable candidate here? Will the left-wing candidate split the vote? Do I have a path to electoral victory? And that's an interesting thing to watch anybody try to negotiate. Emily, things don't work out, I think, in the way she imagined, but certainly in ways that surprise the audience. And she discovers actually her true voice. It is beautiful.
You had mentioned earlier, Amanda, that the young women themselves knew some of the young men participating in Boys State across campus. And so they were receiving calls or texts about what was going on over at Boys State. And they pick up pretty early on the fact that the boys seem to be discussing politics more than the girls, at least in the first part of the week. And a number of your characters really express some, I think, disappointment about that. Ultimately, politics does take on a bigger role in their discussions, but this does seem like a source of frustration for some of them. And it begs the question of why. Why do you think that was the case, at least early in the week?
It was very noticeable to us. It was very noticeable to the kids. They call it fluff. It was just softball programming in the beginning. A lot of, well, in the film, there's a speech about female empowerment and not noticing each other's crooked crowns, but and not trying to fix them. But like, there's a lot of that. I think these girls came in really ready, at least the ones we were following, ready to get into the meat and potatoes of the very hard issues. That's why they went to this camp. Why was it like that? Why did it take the girls? Why didn't they have their parties built over the first 3 days and start chewing on their platforms and everything else? I actually don't know the answer to that question. I just know that it is different. I can only guess that it has to do with legacy of these programs being different and the legacy of what is true in our country and the adult state, right? That women are not in roles of power in the way that men are. So the expectations are different. There's a lot of roles that are put in place for these girls. There's a lot of training wheels on the bike that the girls are riding, right? You have dress code. You can't do sports. You have to have a buddy if you're walking across campus. You know, there's sort of an expectation you aren't going to be rude and talking about politics. And there's just sort of an internalized stuff too, like being very hard on yourself. And I think for all those reasons, it was just slow to get going. But once they did get going, it was really exciting because they were that much more amped to get into it.
There's a kind of decorum, which is old fashioned, feels like it's the 1950s or something. I think it's uncharitable. I think you could say that the program is culpable of being like anachronistic, which it is, but I think it's our country, which is stuck in the 50s in some ways that we need to correct and got a foot in the 21st century too. And to their credit, the program invited us in, warts and all, to tell this story and has confronted this fact. And more importantly, it's the girls in the film, in the program, who confront these rules and restrictions and inequalities that they see. They force the conversation. And we're here to elevate the conversation because it goes well beyond Girl State in Missouri. It is the conversation of our society that women represent only 28% of elected political leaders in our country. Like, how is that possible? Why is that possible? Do we not think that should matter more? And are there other issues that are more important? I think it's one of the great kind of values of the film, of the story, is that we see young women confronting these systems, invisible systems around them that hold them back, and they're not going to have it.
Yeah, I found it one of the most powerful parts of the film that the young women themselves are confronting these issues and confronting really the organizers of Girls State and Boys State about this. This issue of equality, as Emily describes it, between the two programs comes to the fore when she herself decides to write an article for the paper that's going to come out, the newspaper that's going to come out, and she pursues the story doggedly. Again, this is part of her journey and her growing awareness of the world and her place in it. When the article comes out and she finds that somebody has changed the headline to really distort what the article is about. But this pursuit of this story and her journalism seems to take the film in a surprising direction, a new direction. As the two filmmakers, did you feel like this was a direction you weren't expecting, or how did this really change the film itself?
I was surprised. Emily had an interest in journalism. We'd never seen her do that. And I also, in the film, early in the film, that her ideas about whether the disparity between men and women in the world, her feelings are very different by the end of the film. And that's an amazing surprise. You hope for that, right? She starts off really feeling like the disparities are not a problem. In fact, talking about the disparity is what's keeping women from having equality. And by the end, I think her recognition of, at least in this space, and therefore what we understand really is a microcosm of the macrocosm, this is real, right? So that was really moving to watch, actually, her awakening. She's such a powerful force and comes into the film strong, saying, I'm going to run for president. And by the end, it has a more qualified sort of version of that. But she'll continue fighting. But I do think she has a more nuanced understanding of what's going on, I think.
It's not unlike the swerve in the overnighters, which at first you might feel like is abrupt and unexpected. But actually, as you understand the character, is kind of central to who they are. And Emily's weakness as a candidate is that she's not the performer. She's actually a listener. But in fact, that superpower is what allows her to be, I think, an extraordinary journalist and to break the story in a way. And so everything in her was there. It just had to find expression in this other way. And she has to find it for herself. So I guess that's why we like making documentary film. When your candidate doesn't win, too, it's like we sort of graft these conventional narrative expectations onto our story as we're filming it. Like, you know, we've hitched our wagon to these candidates and Emily is our main character. We're spoiling the outcome here for our audience. So put on earmuffs. But I think this film is powerfully about losing and what you do when you lose. And not just for Emily, but for Nisha as well. These kids who don't get what they hope for. And what do they do with that? And to see them be resilient, just very moving. And ultimately, they have incredible impact on this world that they're in at Girl State, despite not getting the brass ring they're seeking to begin with.
I hadn't thought of that, but definitely this is a film about losing and what you do with that. And they do an amazing, amazing job with losing in terms of their own development and maturation as people. You had mentioned Roe v. Wade, that the Dobbs ruling was leaked basically as you were making this film. Then the final case was decided right after the film. You end the film with an emotional high. Emily wins the scholarship, which is much deserved. It's a very emotional moment. And that's basically the end of the film. But then the music takes on a slightly darker tone. And there's an inner title that comes on that says 6 days after the conclusion of Missouri Girl State, the U.S. Supreme Court officially overturned Roe v. Wade. And yes, that's a factual statement, but it's also an artistic one. Why did you decide to leave us with that?
I mean, how could we not, Ken? Like, that's such an enormous reality, particularly for these kids in Missouri or anybody in Missouri. So to not acknowledge what that is felt wrong. It's not everything that the movie's about, but it sure is related. Politics matters to people and their rights, and representation matters to how those politics work. So yes, the Supreme Court of the United States, it has female representation on it, but the Missouri legislature does not. It's 28%-ish. So they are the ones that created the trigger law. I'm not saying it would necessarily be different were it actually 50-50. It's a very conservative state, and there are obviously plenty of conservative females. But I do think that those kind of things matter. So I don't think we're making a statement about whether, I mean, I have my own politics, and that's, I think, going to be true on any of these films that we make. But the timing was kind of extraordinary, given that there's never been a leaked decision opinion before. And that really happened just in the week that the session was starting. So it cast a fog over everything. And that's how the week started. And then how could we not answer it with how the week ended?
What's interesting to us about these kids and these programs is they kind of exist in a tense state between childhood and adulthood, between play politics and real politics. Because Stephen was a child of undocumented immigrants in Boys State. The issue of abortion impacts the lives of young women in Missouri. So I think the liminal state in which this story occurs is also mirrored by the state that they're in as young people in transition to adulthood, as people entering an adult state in which these decisions have real consequences in their lives. And I think the audience needs a little help too. because we're just at a, as Amanda likes to say, a camp. I say program because I feel like camp diminishes it, but it's kind of, it's both. It's why we, you know, the pictures of female politicians in rooms full of men at the beginning of the film, I think is echoed at the end of the film with that card and felt throughout. I don't think audiences really need those signposts, but I think we do work hard to frame this story within that larger context. And we don't need much help here because of the ways in which the Dobbs decision concentrated those feelings, and the girls themselves were determined to make sure this was on their agenda. So they do function in both a literal way and a metaphorical way. And I think that's, to me, why this space is dramatically interesting as a storyteller. And I think finding that equilibrium for us as filmmakers does require a little calibration of like when to inject the text card, title card that says this, that, or the other thing.
We are out of time, but I'll just say these two films are both time capsules, but also, I think, eternal and universal. I only wish there were more states for you to cover, because these two films have been truly engaging, really fascinating, and some of the best verite filmmaking that I think we've seen in recent years. Your high-risk approach paid off twice, so congratulations to you. And final note, I did watch the credits and I saw two names among your production assistants that stood out. One was Steven Garza and one was Zoe Moss. So I hope it was great having her on set with you, Zoe.
So good, both of them.
Thank you so much, and best of luck with what's next.
Thanks, Kat. Looking forward to seeing you around.
Yeah, me too.
Top Docs is a production of Woolly Media. This episode was produced by Ken Jacobson and Mike Merrill, and edited by Mike.